Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to The Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. I'm Lydia L. Corey.
And I'm Cathy Weston. Very warm welcome to everyone who's listening tonight in Hertfordshire. We're talking tonight about anxiety issues in children. Now, anxiety, as I'm sure you know, is a natural, normal feeling that we all experience from time to time. And so it can be very, very useful or helpful to adults or children in new or stressful situations. But tonight, Lydia, we're going to be asking, you know, when does it become a worry? Perhaps our children are becoming more anxious in certain situations.
It's a word we're hearing more and more, aren't we? You know, people are talking about anxiety levels in their children. And it seems to have a lot of negative knock-on effects. You know, nobody wants children's stress levels to be too high. I mean, you need to kind of keep them in a contained and relaxed environment as much as you can, but there's too many sources of anxiety, it feels, nowadays.
Yeah, I think we all know that it's a negative thing if it's a regular occurrence. Perhaps that's what we think, you know, with exams, and they've got so many stressful situations to deal with, perhaps through the school year. So tonight we want to know what is anxiety, learn a little bit more about it, and also talk about the sort of what anxiety looks like. So how do we know our children are experiencing anxiety if they're very young, or if they're a little bit older and they're telling you they feel nervous and worried about something? What can we as parents do? So we're going to be joined by some fab guests as usual. We're going to be speaking to Dr. Helen Dodd from the University of Reading in a few seconds, and also Lucy Mortimer, who is from Harpenden and is an expert on mindfulness in children, possibly offering a sort of an antidote to anxiety that they're experiencing.
I have to say, mindfulness is something I hear so much about at the moment, and I'm really, you know, curious to know what it's all about.
Great. So we're lucky to have Dr. Helen Dodd on the telephone, all the way from Reading. Are you there, Helen?
I am, yeah.
Lovely. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Now, Helen, tell us a little bit, first of all, about the unit that you work in and the research that you do.
So I work at the University of Reading. I'm a lecturer there, but we also have a team of clinicians and a team of researchers, and I also do a lot of research myself into child anxiety. And we have a specialist NHS clinic within the School of Psychology at the University of Reading, where we see children who are suffering from anxiety disorders, and we do treatment with them. And a lot of the work that we do in our research is about early identification of anxiety and improving treatment of anxiety, so that more and more children can benefit from the treatments that we're
wonderful. Well, let's start with that early identification. So let's sort of move through the age range with young children. What does anxiety look like? What is it? How do they articulate it?
Yeah. Now, a lot of the work that I've done personally is with preschool age children, and I've actually worked on quite a big project where we worked quite closely with some young children and their parents, and then we've continued to follow those children, and we've just seen them again. They've just turned 12, and we first saw them when they were age 3. So that gives us lots of information about the predictors of anxiety when children get older. And one of the things that we identified when children were aged kind of 3 to 4 years is what we call an inhibited temperament. So what that means is that some children have a tendency to be avoidant of things that are novel, avoidant of strangers, anything they're not sure about, they've not experienced before. They tend to kind of be very wary of that, avoidant of it. They might go back to their parents, kind of want to sit on their parents' lap, that kind of thing, and need a lot of encouragement and support in order to approach anything that's unfamiliar to them.
But Helen, surely that's normal behaviour for a 3 or 4 year old, some would say?
Yeah, it's a really good point. So children, you know, differ on a dimension from very inhibited to very uninhibited. And so what we know is that children who are very inhibited are more likely to have problems with anxiety as they get older. But certainly not the case that all children who are at that end of the scale are going to have problems with anxiety. And for many children, this is just a normal way of responding to the world. And as they get older, they become a bit more confident and they grow out of it.
So what is it about those particular children in terms of their parenting? Have you learned anything about what their parents are like or not like?
Yeah, that's one of the things that we have been studying as well, primarily so that we can give advice to parents of children, you know, who are showing this kind of avoidance and weariness. Because we see a lot of parents of young children who are really concerned. Why is my child like this? What should I do as a parent to try and prevent my child from having longer-term difficulties with anxiety? And one of the things that we do find is also important is how the parent responds to the child's anxiety. So I think as parents, often our instinct is to just give the child a lot of support, a lot of love, a lot of warmth, which obviously is very, very important. But sometimes, inadvertently in doing that, we kind of encourage the child to continue to avoid the thing that's concerning them. And actually, one thing that's quite beneficial is if parents can, in a very warm, supportive way, encourage the child slowly, gradually, at their own pace, to approach something that they're a little bit scared of, a little bit concerned about, a little bit weary about.
So let's put that into sort of a practical scenario. Your four-year-old is brought into nursery or school, first day of school, or maybe the first week of school, doesn't want to go, runs back to mum after he's in the classroom for a few minutes.
Yeah.
What should mum do in that situation?
What you'd want to focus on is kind of gradually allowing the child to face the fear, which is being typically in that situation, being alone without mum there to support them. So it may be that you say to the child, okay, well, mum's going to sit here, but you can go over there and look at a book. So initially it might be about the child separating from mum, but mum still being present.
Okay.
That might be kind of the first step. And then what's really important is when the child shows these kind of behaviours where they are being really brave and they're giving something a go, which does make them feel, you know, a bit worried and a bit fearful, that when they are being really brave, that behaviour is really rewarded and they're really praised for giving that a go. And as children become more confident to do that, then you can kind of up the steps a bit more and to encourage them to kind of engage, maybe go a little bit further away from mum, maybe have a little bit more time without mum there, and just slowly working towards the goal, which would be that they can be there.
So it's sort of gradual disattachment, if that's the right word, you know, on sort of gradually building up a sort of a sense of resilience and awareness from mum.
And it depends very much on the situation and the child, because many children will be clingy with mum, and then the moment mum leaves, they're actually fine. So, you know, it isn't necessarily that straightforward. But if it's the case that the child has something that they're fearful of, and it's clear that they're not just going to kind of snap out of this, then, yeah, it's about very gradually, slowly, in a supportive, encouraging way, supporting them in approaching the thing that is concerning them or that they're anxious about.
It makes an awful lot of sense what you're saying, Helen. And how far do you push it? And how, I mean, what's the best attitude for a parent to take? You said in a very warm and kind way, encourage your child to try the thing it's reluctant to do. He or she is reluctant to do.
I guess what's very important is that the child knows that they have, you know, unconditional love regardless of how well this goes. So you never, ever want to take that away. But equally, sometimes children can find that they're actually kind of almost being rewarded for the anxious behaviour. So if they get extra cuddles with mum, you know, or they get an extra treat or a chocolate bar because they're feeling a bit worried or nervous, then that may inadvertently actually encourage the anxious behaviour. So it's inevitably, as with all things with parenting, it's about finding that balance between, you know, ensuring that your child knows that you're there for them, you're supporting them, you know, you're going to continue to be there regardless of how well this goes, but encouraging them that they can do this by themselves.
And would you say, so quite often parents assume that because a child refuses to do something once or twice or perhaps three times, that you can kind of generalize and say things like, oh no, Mary doesn't like that preschooler, or Jack doesn't like going to his, I don't know, granddad's house or whatever. So you're saying that wouldn't be helpful in this situation. Don't reinforce any kind of reluctance.
Yeah, it's very important to try not give things a label. So, you know, saying that a child is shy, for example, and then the child can kind of take that on themselves and say, oh, I can't do that because I'm shy, or I don't go to nursery because I don't like it there. And actually what we know with children is that lots of things are phases that they go through, and then they get through them, and then, you know, they move on to something else inevitably.
Helen, what about night time? Lots of children are anxious about the dark and the door shutting, or, you know, and end up in mum and dad's bed. What is your general advice about that? That is sort of specific to an age group, probably the under sixes or so.
I mean, in younger children, fear of the dark and fear of being alone is very normal. So children, as they grow, become aware of potential threats. They become aware that their parents aren't there and what that means for them, and they will, all children go through phases, you know, where they have these fears in early childhood, and it's completely normal for them to go through a phase of having that fear, and they get through it and they come out the other side. And the main advice when it's just something which is, you know, it's a developmentally normal fear, is just to try not to make too big a deal out of it, and not to change too much about your routine. Try and be consistent in your approach. You know, if a child has been able to sleep in their room on their own in the dark, and now suddenly they have a fear of the dark, you know, don't change everything that you do. Try and keep everything as consistent as possible, but maybe compromise that they might have a little nightlight or something like that. But I think when people get themselves into trouble, that can be, you know, if you have a complete change of routine because the child has this fear has developed. So, oh, it's okay, now you'll come and sleep in mum and dad's bed. And then, you know, then they get into this cycle of sleeping with mum and dad, and they need that reassurance. And then that becomes very difficult then, if you choose in the future that you don't want your child in your bed anymore, how to break that habit.
I have to say, Helen, I was kind of surprised that you were talking about anxiety in relation to preschoolers. Can even babies and toddlers, I mean, have anxiety too?
Well, I think what's important is how you think about anxiety and how you define anxiety. So fear is part of anxiety, but it's not exactly the same thing as anxiety. And certainly very young children can express fear. So most people who are parents who have an experience of kind of handing their baby to a stranger and the baby gets very upset. And that's a completely normal reaction to strangers, that fear of people that they don't know. So from a very young age, children can feel fear. And it's actually quite useful, it's quite adaptive for us to have this emotion of fear, and it gets us ready and prepares us for situations where we might have to escape or make quick decisions. But young children don't have the kind of thinking-related anxiety that we tend to experience as adults. So, you know, babies aren't lying there in their cots thinking about what they've got to do the next day. You know, it's all very much in the moment. But certainly young children can experience fear. And with preschool children, really what we're talking about, or what we tend to talk about, is temperament. So more of a kind of personality style, a way of interacting with the world, rather than so much talking about anxiety disorders in preschool children.
And what about children who have no fear? I know it's sort of the opposite end of the spectrum of what we're talking about, but children who seem to experience no anxiety, no fear. You've mentioned it's a normal developmental step to feel anxious in particular situations. Mm. Would you have anything to say about those children?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, because the sample of children that I was talking about earlier that we've been following since they were age three, some of those children are at the other end of the spectrum. So are very, what we call, disinhibited. So they, you know, jump in with both feet into any exciting new situation. And, you know, those children are perhaps less likely to have those kind of anxiety disorders, particularly social anxiety disorder. Those children are less likely to experience. But being disinhibited, of course, can come with its own kind of difficulties in terms of parenting a child like that.
And also, presumably, impulsivity isn't a very positive attribute in some ways, isn't it? Jumping in with both feet can get them into a lot of trouble later on, presumably.
Exactly. So I think, you know, both ends of this spectrum raise challenges for parents.
Moving on to sort of, you know, older children, we know that they've all been through the exam period and lots of stress on them from different angles, and maybe they've got stress at home or other problems with friends and things like that. When does it, those are again normal problems in the teenage years, for example, but when, for any parents listening who have children of that age, say secondary age, what do they need to be worried about or look out for?
So you're right that, you know, it's completely normal for older children to have concerns about exams, concerns about friendships, and these things do crop up in their lives. But what I would suggest that parents should be looking for is when the fear that the child seems to be experiencing is out of proportion to the situation or to the threat that is in that situation. Or the child seems to be anxious or fearful when there is, in fact, no threat present. There isn't any kind of particular event that they're focusing on that is genuinely threatening, but they're just generally anxious and worrying about, you know, what they're going to have for dinner, you know, things that aren't threatening. And also the other thing would be kind of how long it takes a child to recover from something which has made them feel anxious. So it might be normal to feel anxious before an exam, but then you come out of the exam, you might be a bit worried about how well did it go. But then, you know, a day or two later, you've wound down, you've got over it, you've moved on. But if a child is continuing to worry and worry about something which is, you know, an event which has happened, and they're not able to move on from it, then that's something that you might look out for. And the main thing we focus on when we think about whether a child, you know, needs to have treatment for anxiety is whether the anxiety is interfering in their life. So when it's impacting their friendships, it's preventing them from wanting to go to school. It means that they can't do something that they would otherwise want to do and enjoy doing. That's really a cue for us that something's going on here and this child might need a bit more support.
Are there any physical manifestations of anxiety? Like, is, you know, you often hear, you associate nail biting with anxiety. Is that just, or hair falling out, is that just urban myths? Is it true at all?
Certainly there are some physical signs of anxiety. Things like, you know, experiencing butterflies in your tummy. Things like headaches, tiredness, tummy aches, those kind of physical, just general complaints can come along with anxiety.
And Helen, what about digestive problems? We know as adults that digestive problems can go hand in hand, or say, you know, there are lots of symptoms in an adult of anxiety. Palpitations, I suppose just the common ones, or feeling a bit sick or nauseous. Yeah. Is that similar in children?
So children would have, you know, could have similar digestive problems, you know. It's very similar, the experience of anxiety, I think, in terms of what's happening in your body, almost regardless of how old you are.
So the key, as you say, is do they bounce back quickly? Because that would be a normal reaction. Are they resilient, basically?
Yeah, so thinking about the level of fear that the child is experiencing and what the situation is. So is that level of fear appropriate for the situation? Do they recover quite quickly and bounce back? Do they show that resilience? And is the anxiety or the fear, worry, interfering with the child's life, just stopping them from doing something which they want to do or that's important that they're doing?
That makes a huge amount of sense, Helen. It's so pragmatic. It's a very easy guide for parents to use. But is it all our fault? Do kids inherit anxiety from us? Do we cause anxiety? Can we do anything to stop it?
It's so true that as parents we feel like everything must be our fault.
Absolutely.
There is some evidence that anxiety has a genetic component. So we know that if we take a group of children with anxiety disorders, around 60 to 70% of them will have a mother with anxiety disorder, and about 30% will have a father with an anxiety disorder.
And how does that affect girls or boys differently, or does it?
Well, anxiety disorders are more common in females almost throughout the lifespan. The difference in terms of the rates that we see in males and females gets larger as children get older. And into adulthood, women are much more likely to experience an anxiety disorder than men.
So, Helen, let's talk about the day-to-day stuff of what parents should say to their children if they're feeling anxious. It's something, you know, we all need to say something to them in the car, on the way to school, or after school, or before they walk into the canteen and they're anxious. What's your advice in terms of the conversations that children that we need to have with them? What's a helpful thing to say?
So I think one thing is very basic, but it's you can do as a parent from quite early on in a child's life, is just talking about anxiety, fear, worries, acknowledging that these are emotions that we have these thoughts, that we have these physical sensations in our bodies when we feel nervous, what that is, how we deal with that, the fact that it is normal in some situations, the fact that it's okay to talk about it, to say this is how you're feeling. And in young children, it can be quite useful to get them to think about those sort of physical sensations and the thoughts maybe that they have, and give those a name so they could talk about, you know, Mr. Worry or my butterflies. And that can kind of help them to identify what's going on when they are feeling anxious.
I was going to mention, you know, modelling behaviour, and then I was thinking in my head about an incident on one of my family holidays when my four-year-old wanted to go down a very long, dark tunnel and end up in the water, and he wasn't scared, but I was petrified.
Yeah.
And I thought, ooh, this is a key moment where you're meant to model, you know, behaviour. It was very difficult because they can see anxiety on your face.
Yeah.
So is the message to do it anyway, or is it detrimental, or is it better, more authentic to say, do you know what, I'm a little bit afraid of that, I think there's, you know, a risk attached to it, I'm not going to do it?
Yeah, I guess it depends on the situation. If it is something which is genuinely risky and you don't want your child to do it, you know, then you would want to talk about the fact that this is a bit risky, and the reasons that, you know, you think it might not be such a good idea. However, if it's something which objectively isn't risky for your child, it's just something that kind of presses your buttons and makes you feel a bit on edge or a bit anxious, then you can either be super brave and just go for it.
I was, by the way, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, for the record.
Proud
of you, Kathy.
Yeah, thank you.
The other thing which could be really useful is to say to your child, oh, Mummy feels a bit nervous, but Mummy's going to be really brave. And to model, actually, being brave and approaching things and giving things a go that you do feel nervous about.
I'm just thinking, so I've got to go down the big slide in Willows, don't I? Thanks a lot, Helen.
But you can say that you feel worried about it and then do it. That's okay.
Yeah.
I think a parental anxiety, I mean, if you take into consideration how anxious you feel as a parent on a day-to-day basis, it's really quite a lot. I don't think it's unusual, especially for the primary carer of children, to feel really anxious at lots of different times of the day.
Yeah, and again, in terms of thinking about whether that's, you know, this anxiety is a problem or whether it's a normal experience of being a parent, we would encourage people to think about, is this affecting my life? Is this stopping me from doing things? Am I not engaging with my child in the way I want to because I'm worried about things to do with them? You know, or is it affecting my sleep? You know, just to think about, how is this actually affecting your life? And or is it just that, you know, this is part of just being a parent, and, you know, you just kind of accept that comes along with it?
Helen, what are the, I mean, I'm thinking of someone I've met in my life who maybe didn't have their anxiety treated as a child and ended up with terrible phobias as an adult. Can it be mismanaged to that extent? That what is the sort of consequence of anxiety untreated in adults?
Yeah. So we know if we take adults with anxiety disorder, around 75% of those adults will have had anxiety before the age of 21. so pretty much in childhood, they would have already experienced significant anxiety. And I think something that happens is that, and it's something actually that one of my colleagues is very interested in looking at in terms of her research, is that a lot of people don't seek help for their a child's anxiety. And because anxiety feels like a normal emotion, and it is a normal emotion, we don't kind of we find it difficult, I guess, to identify whether this is a problem or not. And perhaps there's still some stigma attached to going and seeking help and thinking, you know, as a parent, I need somebody else to help me with to manage this.
So what sort of help are we actually talking about? If someone is recognising these things in themselves listening tonight, I mean, who do they ring tomorrow?
So the first port of call really would be to talk to your GP about, you know, what is it that's going on? Why is it you're particularly concerned? What is it that's come up tonight that's made you think, actually, this is a problem? And then the GP would discuss kind of various options. And if they recognise that, yes, this is something that you need some additional support with, then you would get a referral. There are also options in terms of parents doing things at home. So two of my colleagues have written a book, which is fantastic, and a lot of parents find useful, which is called Overcoming Your Child's Fears and Worries, which is a self-help guide for parents. And you can just buy that online, you can buy it on Amazon, you can buy it in bookshops. And that covers a lot of what we would cover in treatment.
Yeah. We'll flag that up on our Facebook page. Overcoming, I think I've got a copy of that from last year. It's a pink book, isn't it? Overcoming your child's fears and worries. It's absolutely brilliant because it's so practical.
Yeah. So for a lot of people listening who might be feeling a little bit concerned about their child's anxiety, their child perhaps wouldn't be severe enough that they would need a referral and to go into the NHS mental health service. But it may be that just by having a look at that book and taking some of the practical tips and the exercises from the book, that they can really kind of feel empowered to do something about their child's anxiety just themselves at home.
And would those tips be applicable to the parents themselves, or would you always advise an adult going to the GP?
A lot of the techniques are very similar in terms of how we treat anxiety in adults and how we treat anxiety in children. We just frame it differently to make it engaging and understandable for children. The Overcoming book is actually part of a series, and there are other books which are focused more on particular types of anxiety in adults. And so there are self-help books available to help anxious adults as well. I would say it is something that's important to think about for parents to think, how much is my anxiety affecting my child? How much is it actually about my anxiety? Am I modelling things? Am I saying things to my child which is encouraging their anxiety? And often kind of facing it together can be more beneficial than just focusing on the child.
I think one of the things recommended in that book, isn't it, to keep a sort of a diary of anxiety when you feel anxious or when they feel anxious, if they're old enough to?
Yes. So one of the exercises might be to encourage a child to identify when they feel anxious and start to think about, how did you feel, what was going on, you know, what thoughts were you having? So starting to link what's going on in your mind, what are you thinking about, with what's going on in your body. And then asking them to think about, what's the event or what's the thing that's triggered that? What's the situation? What's going on? And so by keeping a diary of those things, the child's encouraged to kind of start linking together, this was happening in my world, it made me feel this way and it made me think these things.
Brilliant. This fantastic. There's so many things to take from this. I think this is a topic that every parent, everyone can identify with, isn't it, Lydia?
Absolutely, on one level or another. You know, I mean, everybody's got a certain amount of anxiety, but everything you're saying, Helen, is just so helpful. It's simple, but it makes complete sense. You know, I've jotted down loads and loads of notes. I love the diary of anxiety. I mean, not that we'll be writing reams of pages, but even a couple of things, you know, everybody's got their flash points, you know, like crossing roads or whatever it is that kind of triggers
that
anxiety.
That kind of resource can be really useful if you do decide you want to go to your GP and you want to find out about getting some more support, and being able to take something like that and saying, you know, these are the things I've been worrying about, these are the times of day I've been thinking. Obviously you don't want to spend too much time. You know, I don't want to encourage people to be spending their days writing down when
absolutely.
They're feeling worried.
No, absolutely.
But just a short note of what was going on at that time to try and start identifying the things that are triggering anxiety.
Helen, last two questions. What is the relationship between anxiety and depression? So childhood anxiety and adult depression. Do they merge into each other?
Yeah, we know that children who have anxiety disorders are at increased risk for depression later on in life. Anxiety and depression do tend to go together quite a lot of the time. Not so much in young children, because young children don't tend to get depression. It's more kind of once they reach adolescence and into adulthood that depression can come along with anxiety. It's not the case that every child who's anxious is going to also experience depression. Some of it probably is about the genetic risk, that there potentially is a genetic risk for both conditions. And also part of it might be that children who are anxious may miss out on things because of their anxiety. And because they're missing out on things and they're not engaging with the world in the same way as a child who's not anxious, that may cause them to feel
socially isolated and a bit more unhappy. That's a very good point.
Mm.
Great. Thank you, Helen.
You're welcome.
Thanks a million, Helen, for joining us tonight on The Parents Show.
That's fine. I hope it was useful.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot. It certainly was.
All the best.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to The Parents Show on Radio Verulam 92.6 FM. Now, we're talking about anxiety on the show this evening and various forms of it. But one solution that we're hearing quite often to anxiety or on the topic of anxiety is the topic of mindfulness. Now, our next guest is engaging with mindfulness specifically for children.
That's right. Hi, Lucy. Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I am.
Lucy Mortimer. So you run, is it a mindfulness practice, say, for children locally?
Yes. Yes. I've trained with the Mindfulness in Schools project, and I go into schools across Harpenden and St Albans to teach children a kind of toolkit of mindfulness techniques to help them when they're feeling stressed.
So what is mindfulness for people who really don't know?
So mindfulness is basically cultivating a clear awareness of the present moment, and it teaches us how to respond rather than to react if we're faced with stressful situations. And then this can allow us to see things more clearly, which can result in a change of behaviour.
So it sounds like, say, if people have panic attacks or moments of anxiety, you're sort of taught to focus, aren't you? Focus on objects around you to sort of calm you down. Is that what it is?
Yeah, well, with mindfulness, we're actually focusing in on ourselves. And so I teach a range of techniques that include anchoring the physical body through the breath and through body scan exercises. So I'm kind of teaching children how stress can affect themselves on a physical level, which I know Helen touched on earlier. And one example is in one of my classes, I said to the children who were probably about aged 8 or 9, and I said to them, put your hand up if you've ever had tummy ache. And obviously everyone put their hands up. And when I said to them, why do you think you get tummy ache? Almost all of them put it down to some kind of food. You know, I eat too much or I eat too quickly. And when I pointed out to them that it could be anxiety-based, it was amazing. Their faces, it was like a coin had dropped. And I just think if they have this understanding of the whole mind and body link, especially in relation to anxiety, then, you know, knowledge is power for them, really.
So the work that you do, is it generally for children aged 8+, or is there sort of an optimal age that they would benefit from that work?
Yeah, so I teach two curriculums. One is for children aged 7 to 11, and the other one's for teenagers, so aged 11 to 16, I go up to.
And you've mentioned the sort of the response they have. What sort of, have you got any like nice little stories about how it's impacted on them in real life after the workshop, if you like?
Yeah, and you know, the final session that we have is very much geared at how they're going to move forward with this. You know, it's like a life skill I'm teaching them. It's a toolkit of techniques. that they can call upon in any time in their future. So it could be next week in a spelling test, it could be next year's sports day if they were really anxious this year, like my youngest was. It could be way off into the future. The transition to secondary school is quite a big thing for them. And they do come back week on week. We have chats about, you know, how have you used mindfulness this week? And they will come up with examples of things they've done where they've really benefited from the exercises that we've been doing together in class. So, yeah, fascinating, really interesting.
Roughly, could I just ask you to speak up a little bit, please, Lucy? Just the volume's a bit low. How long does it take to embed these concepts in children to an extent where they can use it independently of you?
Well, the sessions I run last for between 6 to 9 weeks, and they're kind of an hour long each session. But I do emphasise that they have to practice it at home. It's not a kind of one-hit wonder. They come in once a week and then that's it for the rest of their life. It's like anything, you know, practice does make perfect.
So it's something perhaps the whole family can try and do.
Definitely. And as Helen said earlier, you know, they kind of, we're mirroring our emotions as adults onto our children. And when I go into schools, it's very much a whole school thing. So I don't just work with the children, I work with the staff, I work with the parents, and I run workshops for them as well. And then outside of the school environment, I also run private groups for children.
So Lucy, if people are listening and they don't know whether or not you're in their child's school already, mm-hmm. or they want you to be in their child's school, what are their options for finding out?
Well, they can go onto my website and kind of spread the word, would be fantastic. My website is mindful-child.co.uk, and that gives a lot more information about me and my teaching background. I did a primary teaching degree, and I have testimonials from the schools I have been into, but obviously, yeah, the more schools I get into, the better. And actually, I wrote to Mr. Gove, the Secretary of State, a few weeks ago, and I got a reply from him today, and I was explaining to him how I just felt this whole issue of emotional awareness is overlooked in schools. And actually, if I can just quote part of his reply, he says the schools must provide a curriculum to prepare children for later life, often using personal, social, health and economic education to do this, and they should draw on good practice, and it's being outlined in the introduction to the new national curriculum in September. So it's definitely, the mental awareness is definitely coming into the school environment much more than it has been.
And arguably because we know that it's been called a mental health time bomb, that this generation of younger children are basically, very under a lot of stress.
Sure.
At school and at home, and that these kind of techniques are vital.
They are. And, you know, children's brains nowadays, because of this fast-paced lifestyle that they lead, Their brains are actually getting wired differently to how ours were at their age. And I just think that's frightening, you know. And through mindfulness, the neuroscience behind it really backs it up. And with regular practice, studies are showing that mindfulness can help children to really manage these painful thoughts more confidently. Their anxieties can be reduced. They can actually do better in their reading scores. They can develop stronger attention and concentration skills, and even their immune systems are strengthened.
So Lucy, how did you get involved in this kind of, you mentioned you were a primary teacher, but
yeah.
How did you get involved in mindfulness?
So I've got a primary teaching degree, and I taught across London in a range of state and private schools for a number of years. And then I left to bring up my three children, but I carried on tutoring on a one-to-one basis. And I was getting a lot of children coming to me who were in year six, which is 11-year-olds, and they were preparing for their SAT. And the majority of them were suffering from anxiety, kind of test nerves. And this led me to become interested in the whole mind and body link, especially in relation to anxiety. So I just decided I was going to train. One morning I was watching BBC News, and they had this whole item on mindfulness and what it was and stuff. And I just had this eureka moment, and I thought, that's exactly what I want to do. So I went on to train with the Mindfulness in Schools project, and it's kind of just gone on from there, really.
Brilliant.
It's a fantastic idea. Do you? And I love it. Do you train parents and children at the same time, and teachers, or are they all done separately?
Yeah, they're done separately. I think it's quite nice. What I'm finding is children love this whole idea that it's their thing. You know, even when they go home to their siblings, they've got their own mindfulness folder that no one else sort of is privy to. And then I find that I can run workshops with the parents to go through the language that I'm using during the program so they understand what their children are coming home saying. And then I run workshops and inset days for the staff. So it is definitely a whole school. It involves a whole school environment.
And do you ever come across cynicism? Is it the kind of case where if people don't believe what you're saying, they just don't get it? And do people resist it as a concept?
Do you know, I've been really surprised because they haven't. I've been amazed actually how many people are really on board with it, because it's been such a kind of hip happening word at the moment, hasn't it? It's in all the media at the moment. But to me that implies that it's here today, gone tomorrow. But actually, it's definitely here to stay in my eyes. I think it's a vital skill to teach children as early as possible so they don't go into adult life with this extra emotional baggage with them. So yeah, I've been really pleasantly surprised, and especially with all the neuroscience that backs it up, you can't really argue against it.
Could you give us one quick example, sorry to put you on the spot, Lucy, of something that a mindfulness technique that we could use on a day-to-day basis, just a very simple thing of day-to-day things, or is it bigger than that?
Well, I guess the one thing that I like to focus in on with children that's very powerful is becoming aware of your breath and really feeling it. So if you're sitting at traffic lights, if you imagine the most frustrating situations in your day, it would probably be you're at the traffic lights and they're red, you've got to get to your meeting, you might be about to walk into a meeting that you're very apprehensive about, anything. If you can kind of flip that on its head and just suddenly try and focus all of your attention to your breath, and wherever you feel your breath the strongest, because some people can focus in with the breath coming in and out their nose, or in their throat, or their chest, or deep down in their abdomen. If you can really focus your full attention on that, you're shifting your whole mental awareness away from your doing head that's giving you the problems and the panic and the thoughts spiraling out of control. And you're actually pulling that energy down into your body. And by doing that, you're actually calming yourself. And studies show that does alter your brainwaves, enabling you to see the situation much more clearly.
It's fascinating. It's such a simple technique.
It is really simple. It's really empowering because children can actually feel it. You know, it's not like counselling where they have to go and talk to someone about how they feel. They just feel it within themselves. It's like this strong anchor that we all have. You just have to know how to tap into it.
And I can imagine it's a technique you don't just need to use in the car, like if you're kind of a bit wound up going to bed, or
definitely,
you know, or especially with children nowadays, because something that we're hearing regularly on the parents' show is kind of overuse of screen time and how it's kind of hyping children up too much. And I mean, one recent guest we had suggested that for every screen a child has in a bedroom is 1 hour less sleep a night, you know. So children are too kind of wound up and overexposed.
They are. And the way that children look to calm down is to literally often sit in front of a screen. And in our Western culture, we're taught very much that if we are wound up, we look elsewhere for something else to fix us or for someone else to fix us. Whereas with mindfulness, you're fixing yourself from the inside. You're kind of working from the inside out, not the outside in. So the power's within you.
And one last question. I know we're really keeping you on now, Lucy. Do you find children are kind of more amenable to this idea than parents and teachers, or is it pretty much equal?
Do you know, I think it's pretty much equal. And I find it quite amusing that when I go into schools with this thing about I'm here for the children, and I start running a session, and the number of staff who pop their heads around the door and they're saying, oh, can I come in? It's fascinating. I want to be on board as well. So, yeah, it's definitely for everyone. Yeah, whatever age, you know, anxiety affects every age, so we can all benefit from these techniques.
Absolutely.
Lucy, one last question from a listener. Have you got a Facebook page?
Yes, I have. And I can't remember. I think it's probably if they go to my website, there should be a link from that onto my Facebook.
Oh, lovely. That's a great tip.
Yeah.
Okay, listen, thank you so much, Lucy Mortimer. I'm sure your website will get lots of hits tonight and tomorrow. And thank you so much for joining us on the Parent Show this evening.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
All the best, Lucy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Now, tonight's show was all about anxiety and dealing with solutions to anxiety, such as mindfulness. And our last contributor was speaking to us about mindfulness for children, teachers, and parents. And it's a fantastic technique, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of like meditation in a way, it sounds like to me, Kathy.
It sounds like, I think the difference from what I didn't know about it is that it's very focused on people, on the self, isn't it? On people's, you know, just grounding themselves. And yeah. I think to feel physically grounded is something wonderful thing that, well, everyone can benefit from. But for a child to, yeah. to learn that skill is fantastic.
I have to say, I didn't even think it would be possible for a child to get that. I mean, you know, as an adult, it took me years to kind of get into the idea of yoga. And I mean, and part of me thought, well, you can only get this the older you get, the younger, you know, younger people don't get it. But obviously that's not true. But I mean, it was something that I had always thought. But the idea that like a 10 or 11 year old could learn mindfulness techniques.
Or younger. And yeah. I think that it's the case that they are. And I think I'm of the opinion now that the earlier the better, that they're even aware, as she said, that anxiety feels like this. You know, that's what it's called. It's not, you know, it's not a sort of a, it's something to be aware of. It's awareness of how your body and mind are related. Isn't that what she said?
That's exactly it, yeah.
And to get that is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was really interested in what Dr. Helen Dodd was saying about, so surprised that she said it was an issue for preschoolers. I don't know. I just never assumed. Of course, I thought they'd have worries, they'd have issues. But calling it anxiety and detecting it as a possible issue early on. I mean, that's what she was saying, early identification and early treatment and the parents' response are key.
Really to, key at that point,
yeah,
aren't they?
To getting, because it's an early marker for anxiety in later years. And of course it only makes sense what she said. You know, if your child keeps coming back to the same issue, which is not a big issue, then you need to get into that issue, don't you? You need to kind
and
of pick it apart.
I think her message was, don't feed into it, don't reinforce yeah. it, don't give them treats yeah. when they feel anxious. Try your best in the moment to say, you're going to be okay. And just, if it's very chronic, just sort of gradually
pick it apart. Pull them
yeah.
out of it.
But don't sort of feed into it and reward them, which makes total sense.
Absolutely. And it's all of our first reactions to do, but to kind of go, like, to label children, go, oh, you know, Blas child, you know, is always very shy, is always very scared, is always, like, how quickly you can reinforce negative
yeah,
characteristics
yeah.
is astounding, isn't it?
And the fact that anxiety does have a sort of a that it seems to be passed on generationally is something hopefully that mindfulness and intervening yeah. can have an impact on.
60% with women, 30% with mothers,
with
fathers.
That. We don't want to pass on
no.
our own neuroses. And
no.
I think the show tonight is for the whole family, really. That's
yeah.
what I've picked up. We can't expect our children to sail through these things if we don't at least try to.
Absolutely.
In a positive way.
And she said, am I, and the thing that I found was really interesting, you know, as a parent, are my own anxieties stopping me relating to my child? You know, I mean, such an important question to ask. You know, everybody's got their fears and phobias, and have we kind of just lost perspective a little bit when, you know,
I think that's a brilliant question. And I think that's where I think the diary is useful.
Yeah.
Just pay attention to when you're anxious.
But do you know something? I think, I don't even think, if she was very clear that she didn't want us to go off and be writing reams of a diary.
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
that's absolutely right.
That's right.
But to be honest with you, if any of us sat down and just said, okay, for half an hour, I'm just going to think, what are my fears? What are my anxieties? Like, how often? You know yourself,
but
how
even,
often
I'm
you feel
I'm going to try
them.
And do it tomorrow. But like, even with your phone, you know, just
yeah.
write in, oh,
yeah.
a school gate. Anxious.
Yeah.
When is it?
Yeah.
And then think, well, why is
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And is that something that's a worry, or is it?
And is it distracting me from actually just getting on with life and getting on with living with my children?
Or being pleasant with
yeah.
my children? Why
yeah.
am I so anxious at that particular time? And
yeah.
It's a great exercise, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Across the board. We all need a little bit of it. But yeah, a very useful show on all accounts. And I mean, I don't consider myself an anxious person. I think most people I know aren't anxious persons, but everybody has a little bit of anxiety, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. It's you know, it is an important point that both of our guests made, is that this is a norm. If your children are not anxious at certain points where you would expect them to be, then that's, you know, it's developmentally healthy to feel anxious at certain moments. isn't it?
So, absolutely. Yeah. Great. Fantastic guest, Dr. Helen Dodd. Thank you very much for joining us this evening.
And Lucy Mortimer, at very short notice, was invited on the show this evening. Thanks so much for participating.
Now, thank you very much for listening to The Parents Show. We're with you every Thursday night from 8 to 9 p.m. on 92.6 FM, or you can listen online at www.radioverulam.com and click on the Listen Live button. We have every single show is podcasted, and you can listen to it back again. The wonderful Neil Brearley podcasts them all for us, so big thanks to him for all his hard work. And thank you to our studio assistant, Julie Dean, who is here with us every week making sure the show goes ahead. So if you want to get in contact with us, tell us about show ideas, if you'd like to be a guest on our show, go to our Facebook page, The Parents Show, let us know what your thoughts are, or drop us an email on parentsshow@radioverulam.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening on the show. All the best. Bye-bye.
Neave Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parents Show. The friendly team at Neave's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit neavesolicitors.co.uk. Neave's Solicitors, your complete legal solution.